Let's go ahead, Lisa.
Okay. Can all of our board and staff hear? Give me a thumbs up. All right. This meeting is being recorded. Once President Brooks asks me to call the roll, indicate you are here, as well as give me permission to record by verbally stating here, permission to record. Very good. I call the September 14th, 2021 Committee of the Whole meeting of the Millennium Park District to order. Lisa, please call the roll and note the time. Great. I'm just going to try to really quick send this new link to Bart. He said it's not working, so I'm going to copy it, send it on over. Hold on one second. I'm trying to be rude here. All right, let's see if that works. Okay.
Maybe, Jenny, you could reach out. I don't know if you're able to contact him. You're usually
good at
getting people on track. That's a problem.
I just sent him, so maybe hopefully that's good. Commissioner Boren?
Yes, permission to record.
Commissioner Covey?
Your permission to record, but we'll try and find a different laptop.
Okay. Chair Brooks?
Yes, permission to record.
703, and Commissioner Schneider's trying to get in now, so we'll say that.
I think I'm just going to wait just a second to jump on, because we're down a commissioner anyway, so.
Oops. I didn't want to start it. Just see, make sure. Link.
And I guess this gives Michael a chance to switch out his device too.
Yeah, I'm
oh, there he is.
Just keep going. You guys should keep going. I'm up in here.
Got it.
All right.
I see Bart. Hopefully he'll be with us.
Hi, Bart.
The last two times my links haven't worked.
That's weird. We'll make sure we text them before the meeting from now on.
Yeah, when you text it, then that one works. All right, sorry for that.
Yeah, Bart, wonderful. I think Zoom had an update, so if you haven't used Zoom in a while, you have to update your software.
Okay, I'll try that. Thanks, Michael.
So, Commissioner Schneider, are you say here in permission to record, please?
Yes, yeah, here, permission to record.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Very good. So we will move on to matters from the public. It's our practice not to address questions at this time. However, we will take comments under advisement. Is there anyone who would like to make a verbal comment? If so, please limit comments to 3 minutes per person and indicate by the raising your hand little icon, and I will call upon you. And that's good, too. A hand. Fortunately, I don't know whose hand that belongs to. So, man in blue shirt with lamp over his right shoulder.
Chuck Duffield, and can I ask everybody else to go on mute so we don't have little... You're not talking to go on mute? Thank you.
Thank you very much. I will limit my remarks to 3 minutes. My name is Chuck Duffield. For the last 7 years, I've served as the captain of one of Glencoe's two men's teams that compete in the Suburban Shoreline Summer Tennis League. Glencoe also has a women's team that competes on Thursdays. The men compete on Saturdays. Collectively, our teams comprise roughly 50 of the most avid tennis-playing citizens within Glencoe. The league's been around forever, and it's a great outlet for friendly competition and camaraderie and a way for new residents to meet people. On behalf of all of us, I would like to offer our sincere thanks to the Park District staff, Lisa, Chris, Adam, Shannon. They have been tremendously supportive of us for the duration of my involvement. They grant us an annual license to play. The Park District has updated its website so that new residents are aware of the league and know how to get involved. And they're also tremendously responsive to points we make about maintenance. So we're very grateful. Having said that, I'm here tonight, as is my friend Mike Cohen, the other captain. because we're concerned about the plan to eliminate one of the tennis courts at West Park. And first point, for us selfishly, we use all three courts at West Park as part of our competitive week play. We're concerned that if there are only two courts left at West, we don't know whether we'll be able to continue to participate in the Shoreline League, which would be a shame after 20 plus years, particularly given the relative importance tennis was given in the community survey. But more broadly, we're supportive of pickleball, but we don't think two courts is going to be enough for the community. We think a better plan might be to develop a nucleus of pickleball courts in the lakefront location, which is currently almost unplayable for tennis. But in lieu of putting two courts at West for pickleball, the community could potentially put six courts or more for pickleball at lakefront, which would potentially lend itself to, you know, more revenue generating group classes, potentially revenue generating league play, and overall just support the camaraderie. So we know that the plans have been formalized, but we would respectfully request that these be reconsidered. And the overall tennis and pickleball footprint be looked at holistically, potentially with the benefits of creating a nucleus of courts in one location or another, depending on the sport. Alternatively, we would ask that the board consider either a mixed usage approach, as we have at Watts currently, that would allow for the continuation of three tennis courts at West, or if space permits, adding two pickleball courts onto the current footprint at West, which consists of three tennis courts. Thank you very much for your consideration. I appreciate the opportunity to speak.
Yes, thank you so much for your comments. Chuck, and I saw your name for a second, and you've got your hand up. Yes, sir, go ahead. Patty.
Would that be Mike and Patty?
Yes.
Mike, you're on mute.
Yeah, you, Mike. There you go.
Can you
hear
me now?
Yes, we can.
Okay, Patty. Yeah, because most of the time we use them for family matters and not the village matters. And I agree with Chuck, and that you've been very helpful, and you've listened to what we've talked about. But I'd like to take it from a slightly different approach. The Park District has 14 courts. They list 14 courts. But three of them are really unplayable for competition or for teaching. And on a Saturday morning, we use five for Shoreline and three for teaching generally. So out of the 11 courts, eight of them are already spoken for. And if you take a couple for pickleball or even one, there's hardly anything for the citizens of the village to use, unless they use those courts at the lakeside, and they're really not, they're really just not very good. They're fooling around maybe, but not for playing tennis. So I think the board ought to reconsider a little bit about pickleball. Pickleball's become a much more popular sport. Could use six, eight courts without question. I would offer two suggestions. Either we do the lake, either redo the courts at the lakeside and make them pickleball, or you redo them and make them playable for tennis. We're really not, you know, we really don't care how you do it, but we're a little tight on Scott courts now. This wasn't true many years ago, but it's becoming true now. I've lived in the village since 1970, so that's over 50 years. My wife grew up here, and tennis was never a problem. But it will be if you put pickleball courts in place of the tennis courts. The other thing I'd like to make is that a mixed use of pickleball and tennis is tough on the tennis players. On one tennis court, you can put two pickleball courts. And if you put two pickleball courts and four players on each court, you have eight people on one court next to somebody perhaps playing a singles match. Well, it's noisy. I'm not saying it can't be done because certain park districts have done it, but it's not exactly the ideal situation. So I think the board ought to start to reconsider the place for pickleball in our community, and also remember that tennis has become more popular, and we do have a need, and there was plenty of courts at one time, but they're becoming very tight. So I just want to thank you for listening to what I had to say. I'm full support of Chuck. I'm the captain, by the way, of the white team, so I've got to field the team too, and we just need proper courts. That's what we're asking. I know that the park district has been is willing to listen, and I know that they've been cooperative, and I hope that you'll be that way with this matter also. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Okay, are there any more public comments?
Oh, David Israel, I believe, is that his picture's not there, but his hand's up. David?
Okay, I don't see either, so go ahead, David.
Hi, it's actually his wife, Sarah. Hi.
Okay.
First of all, thank you for allowing us to make a comment, and I wanted to start by saying I appreciate all the work that Children's Circle has done with everything going on with just early learning in general, especially during times of COVID. We've been a huge, huge supporter of them and so appreciative of all the work that's gone into it. So I know Jessica, I see you. So thank you, Jessica. Thank you to your staff. I just wanted to take a second to make sure that we're paying extra careful attention to keeping our kids safe and making sure that the staff, especially the early childhood staff, has vaccines, and we're keeping our kids as safe as possible given everything that's going on, and especially with the new Delta variant and all the kids getting sick. So as parents and two kids in Children's Circle, we would really, really appreciate making sure that the staff in the school was vaccinated.
All right. Okay, Sarah, thank you so much. And is there anyone else today for the public comments portion of the meeting?
I don't see any other hands up.
I do not either. So I think we will move on. It's a busy meeting. We're going to move to discussion on COVID-19 policies and procedures. Lisa Shepherd, Executive Director, will lead that discussion.
Great. I'm going to share my screen. Can everybody see that? Oh, there we go. Hold, please. What happened to it? There it is. Okay, today we put a lot of information in the board packet tonight, and I know that the commissioners have read it and have actually called and asked questions. We also put our survey that we did to Children's Circle parents in the board packet for the board and the community to see the results. So I'm not going to go over every detail because, as President Brooks indicated, it's a long meeting tonight. So what we're looking for, we're looking for is direction on a number of district-wide policies regarding COVID-19. And remember, this is district-wide. Children's Circle is part of a larger organization, local park district, so anything that applies there also applies to all of our programs in relation to our policies here. So I included the policy. So the first question we had is, does the board want to advance vaccine mandate for eligible staff and independent contractors for approval? The board was given policies, and I sent updated ones to you this afternoon. They're included in your board packet. It's just important to note that employees can be exempt for disability, medical condition, or sincerely held religious belief. Those exemption forms were also included in the board packet as an example of what we will be giving staff who request those accommodations. If an employee is unable to have a vaccine, the employee will be subject to a minimum of weekly testing, maybe more depending on what the rate is in the community at that time. It's a important to note that staff is recommending advancing the mandatory vaccine policy. So I'm throw it to the board or the committee to see if you have any questions regarding this and any discussion. And Jess and Bobby are here to answer any questions you may have on this one or any of these items coming up. Any questions from any board members? I can. No?
It's not a lack of interest. We have gone through the packet, we had discussions, we have had meetings, and I personally, speaking for myself, have I've had all of my questions answered and am no longer wondering about anything. So that's my perspective. I suspect that might be where the other commissioners are as well.
Okay, I
read through it today, Lisa. You and Lisa Shepherd, you and I chatted about some minor cleanup items, but I appreciate the one-on-one time that we had to walk through the issues.
Great. I guess I just need a consensus to advance this to the special board meeting that will be held immediately after this committee meeting for approval. So that's what I need from you to move on.
Okay, so I approve advancing this to the meeting.
Excellent. Thank you.
Michael?
All right.
You need more than one person to advance it?
We're going to get a consensus if we can.
Oh, yes. I agree. Move to the board meeting.
Stephanie? Yep. And Bart?
Yes.
Oh, very good.
Excellent. Thank you.
Do you have what you need?
Yep, that's what I need for that one. Everybody go to the next question. The next question we have for the board is, should children of close contacts be able to attend children's circle? So IDPH does not recommend that children be isolated from school based on a family member being in close contact with a family. They cited that due to the amount of time that children had missed school and how rare it is for an individual to turn into positive case. And it happened, yes, but in this case it's very rare. Some other daycares have done that, and now they're backing off on that because they're seeing how much children have to miss their daycare program. It also is important to note it's not just like siblings of other kids in children's circle, but it would also be family members such as parents who are close contact from someone at work. It could be anybody from the grade school. Another program that parts of that, so that children's circle kids go to Tiny Dancers and someone in Tiny Dancers has it, they would have to then be pulled out of program. So it could really be a lot. And so citing how rare it is, the staff is recommending that we continue to follow IDPH's guidance. We could break down exactly what we do in our program, the ages, the mask wearing, everything, and they still held firm to that recommendation. Do you have any questions on this?
I have no further questions.
This is one that we discussed. This is one that I had a harder time with, but I know the ramifications of the domino effect. And I also know that we have to also hopefully, rely on parents. We don't know what they're doing outside of the school, and hoping that they're being responsible in that sense too. So this was a hard one for me, but I stand behind the staff's decision.
It is important to note that the parents also agreed with that they would like to, in the survey, they would like to continue to follow the IDPH guidance. So that was the majority of the parents also agreed with that, 53%. Anybody else?
Bart, are you good with the IDPH rules as we've been following them?
Yes. Yeah, I would like to continue that. I support the proposal to follow IDPH.
And Michael? Okay, Lisa, do you have what you need?
Yep, so you've seen no policy change in that one. We will not advance that to the next board, the board meeting. Okay, the last one we have question is, should teachers and children wear masks outdoors? The CDC states that the risk of transmitting COVID-19 outdoors is much lower. They no longer consider any outdoor contact to be considered a close exposure. they do recommend if you're in large, big groups, your vessels, stuff like that, you may consider wearing them. Staff does not recommend mask mandate outside. We think it's very important for kids who have, since the risk of transmission is so low, to have some unmasked time for their social and emotional growth, and being able to see their teachers talk and other kids talk and smile, it's good. It's really good for them. So, Jeff, I don't know if you have anything to add on this one.
No, just what you said about them being able to see us, see our mouth. We've seen an increase in speech delays. We currently have 11 students in speech therapy, which is more than we've ever had before.
And yes, and the teachers are doing a fantastic job trying to get the kids outside as much as possible as they can. We have ordered more fencing so that we can meet GCFS regulations and have children outside even more than we do now. So we are not recommending this. Any questions?
The only comment I'll say, it seems like we are, the vast majority of our policies will be in line with that of local schools. There's maybe one or two places where we see slightly deviate, but it seems that the vast majority is in line with the local school district. Is that correct, Lisa?
That's correct. Except where it differs for ECFS regulations for young children, but we do file IDPH, and so does the school district.
Okay.
So that's why it's a good policy to continue to file IDPH, because those change regularly, and we can change them in time and file those also.
Yeah, I want to appreciate the effort you guys are making to be consistent with our neighbors at P35 and, of course, with IDPH and other recommendations.
Okay. Do any commissioners want to discuss it further or move this to the board meeting for a policy change, or are we good with the way it is? Bart, are you good?
Yeah, I'm good with the way it is. I don't think we need masks outside, so.
Thank you. Thank you, Stephanie.
Yes, and as we discussed, if there is a parent who wants their child to wear a mask outside, the teachers are aware of that and will make sure that gets done.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I'm in favor of it, because I really feel everybody, including the teachers, need to mask break. It's really important. It's a very long day with little kids with that mask on, so for the teacher's sake as well. So this does not need anything further. You need nothing else from us, right, Lisa?
We do not.
Okay.
So as far as the COVID-19 policy changes, we have no other questions or recommendations at this time. We realize this is a hard situation, it's ever evolving, and we're committed to keep on communicating with parents of Children's Circle and of all of our programs. Communication, we know, is one of the biggest things that we can do to help with this. When we did the parent survey, remind people that we do have an early childhood advisor group, and we had a lot of people we're happy to say put their name on that list to talk about this and hopefully stay on and talk about other issues we have so that we can continue to work with parents and communicate with everybody the changes that we're making. Thank you. Okay, any other questions on that?
No, so we will move on. And by the way, for anyone watching, it may appear as if we're making quick decisions. These are not quick decisions. We have spent an enormous amount of time in discussion and reading materials, both provided by the district and others. And I think we came to this meeting very well prepared. So thank you, Lisa, for everything that the staff did in preparation for the meeting. And then we will move on to a discussion of the Glencoe Beach Pier materials. Lisa Shepherd and Chris Miner will lead that discussion.
Excellent. As you know, we have the pier that needs to be resurfaced down to the beach, and we're planning to do it next spring. We brought the different surfacing and railing concepts for discussion to the Lakefront Advisory Group and have some of their opinions. I don't know if Chris, you want to share some of the options we have and what we kind of did a little, put a dot by your favorite peer design and get a consensus going forward. So I'll turn it over to Chris. What was that?
Are we
one of the different
options right now, or no?
Yeah. You're cutting in and out, Chris.
Your audio is pretty bad, buddy.
Yeah.
Is that better?
Yeah.
All right. Just switching between different pieces of equipment. So, 1 second, sorry. So, can everybody see attachment one, decorative concrete options right now?
Yes.
Okay, so as the board may remember, the last time we had Baird come out, they showed us 35 different concrete finishes that they indicated had all the same level of performance. So where we kind of left this last was, we know we wanted a concrete cap because we know we wanted the performance against what Lake Michigan had to throw at us. So as Lisa indicated, we took a couple of concepts that Baird refined for us with their landscape architect and the Lakefront Advisory Committee, and we wanted to seek the committee's feedback. So first off, we have attachment one, decorative concrete options. This received the least vote from the Lakefront Advisory Committee with a total of 0 votes. So the next option we have here, can everybody see figure two, option B?
Yes.
This received 4 votes from the Lakefront Advisory Committee, which was the most votes. No one voted twice that I know of. And the third concept we have here is a red brick. This received 2 votes. The feedback for figure two was that it was had continuity with what we already have down there with the existing stone, the PVC walkway. The feedback that we got about figure three, option C, was that it kind of had a matching downtown kind of feeling. So there, that was kind of where the committee was coming from with that. One of the things that went over really well was this embellishment here. This is the Compass Rose. The sailors in particular really like this. Obviously, it's not a entire finish. We don't imagine putting out 80 or 90 of these things out on the pier, but just some kind of really cool embellishment that we could do at the end. So I guess the question is, do we want to talk about the surfacing and the railings as one subject? Because they are going to have a look when you compare them together, or do we just want to talk about the surfacing specifically by itself first? I would defer to Lisa Brooks on that.
Yeah, you know what, Chris? Why don't you introduce the railings and then, you know, the interior decorators on the board can you know, render their opinions. Go ahead.
So can everybody see handrail attachment two?
Yeah.
Okay, so we had Baird provide us a couple of different styles of handrails. The direction that we gave them was, this is something for Lake Michigan. Don't show us something that is a decorative decking railing. We want something that's going to be resilient. So we had a number of different railings that we showed the Lakefront Advisory Committee. Here we have figure 5. You can see all figure 6, figure 7, figure 8, figure 9, which this was cable railing. We didn't feel like it was very resilient. Figure 10, Galveston, this was in Texas. So what the Lakefront Advisory Committee settled on was really a dead tie between figure 5, which is in Indiana, which is made of stainless steel, and figure 8, which is again in New York, which is made of stainless steel. So stainless steel is the most resilient material. We won't have to go down the road of painting the railings like we do now. However, as the most resilient material, it is also the most expensive material. So it is likely that stainless steel will be above the original amount that we have budgeted. We do have some contingency for escalation in our project budget, which I consider the board packet. But with the decreases that we're seeing in the market right now due to COVID and just general inflation, it's likely that we're going to see a majority of our projects coming back next year with the budget a little bit higher than we were hoping for. So I think it's important as we have this discussion about the resilient railings, knowing that we're likely going to have to set a little bit more money aside on this one if we want to pursue that option. Not outside of the realm of possibility, but this project is partially funded by an insurance claim via Federma, so there are some funds out there that we can capture for this, but it's worth noting as we discuss it.
Okay, who would like to lead off with their personal preference?
If you were here in person, I would make you put a dot so no one can tell who is voting for what, but you're not here, so you have to.
I like number 8, and I like the one that the majority of the committee likes.
That one?
Chris, you kind of were going in and out, so did you say only some of the railings are going to put us over budget, or any of the railings are going to put us over budget?
Well, that's a good question, Stephanie. At this point, we're likely going to see escalation on anything, but the stainless steel is going to be the highest amount.
And both 5 and 8 were stainless steel.
Yes, that's correct.
A question for you, Chris. First of all, I've been talking about these railings for 6 years, so I'm seriously happy that we're doing this because it's been a need for quite a while. One thing I noticed on the current railings that are no longer there was that it became a perch for the seagulls, who would en masse go along there and then, you know, do their business, which of course contaminates the water that we then test, et cetera, et cetera. So I was wondering, are any of the styles of these less likely to provide a happy perch for the seagulls, like for instance the rounded one, or is that purely speculative? Who knows? Actually, 8, if you could go to, yes, I was thinking that might be somewhat less, their little feetsies couldn't grip on the way they could to the one we had with the square thinner top. Any thoughts?
You know, Lisa, I would love to tell you that the round top railing could get rid of all the seagulls, but that would just be purely speculative. It's certainly a question that I can ask Baird. You know, anybody who, and I would defer to Bobby, if he's spending so much time around the ocean and boating facilities, have you seen any railing types that seem to be efficient in deferring our little feathered friends?
I would be speculating, brutally honest. I have no clue.
Yeah. I think Chris would have to go out and grease them.
But you know what, I'd imagine that the grease we pick would be like the attractant, you know, so.
Okay, thank you. And while I have the floor, I will say I concur with Stephanie, which I believe is in line with the committee, and I think they're both very attractive.
Okay, so can I just clarify, Stephanie, you indicated that you like figure 2 option B?
Correct.
So that's the gray, the imitation decking?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and Stephanie, was this your preference as well, the figure 8 railing?
Correct.
Okay, and Lisa Brooks, you had the same?
Yes.
Okay.
The committee, the advisory group liked that one too because it's a little slanted. They thought maybe kids couldn't climb on it as much.
Yeah, I thought that too. Okay,
yeah.
Mike. Oh.
Chris, you know what my question is going to be. How much more?
I knew it. We prepped for that question.
Could be doubled.
What is X and what is 2X?
We're probably looking, you know, in the initial cost estimate. Let me pull it up here. In the initial cost estimate, we were looking at probably something around $35,000 for railings. So with escalation that we're seeing now for COVID, you know, I would safely put that number around 45, something like that. You know, with the stainless steel railings, I think we're probably closing in the 80s and 90s, to be honest with you.
That is a hefty sum. Are there other projects that we've recently completed that have come in under budget that, you know, overall were not?
That's a good question. All of them.
All of them coming under budget.
Yeah. If you were to add up that all of them under budget, are we talking like an extra 45 grand that we can comfortably place here and not feel like we're, you know, burdening individuals or projects?
Without putting John on the spot and getting out our adding machines, I would say that we could come back to the board with that in writing. I'm comfortable with that. I mean, I think from an operational standpoint, not having to paint the railings every year and have that additional operating expense, we're going to find in the lifespan of these railings, which hopefully, fingers crossed, will be 20 to 30 years, I think we're going to find that the stainless steel pays for itself. Certainly between the savings we had in Cog Park, looks the railing, I think we've made that number, that 45,000, but that's just looking at this in a vacuum, not looking at this with escalation in the Watts project.
No, I get it.
Your project, so I think, you know, there's a lot that's out there right now for us that we really haven't had a chance to do a deep dive into with the board yet.
Here's what my ask is of you, and probably of John. I'll put the work on John. If you can give me just a quick NPV on the maintenance versus the investment. I mean, you're going to, you know how I feel, I'd much rather spend a little bit more in CapEx and a little bit less in OpEx. But it'd be good just to see that on paper, make sure that we're thinking about this the right way. Because Chris, I could not agree more that I'd rather spend a little bit more net now and not have maintenance or issues in the future, but it's good just to double and triple check that that's what's been happening.
I mean, I can tell you it cost us about 8 grand to paint the railing the last time we did it with a contractor, so you're looking at 5 years.
So you're talking 40 grand to paint it versus an extra 45 grand to put this in. That's pretty break-even.
Yeah, it will be in the long run.
Well, I mean, you're looking at an amenity with a 20-year lifespan, and I'm not saying that in 20 years we'll have to do no maintenance. Lake Michigan can be really cruel, but, I mean, over the term, you're looking at, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in painting versus, you know, an additional $40,000 up front design and or construction, so. Basically, we're paying right now for a contractor around $8,000 to paint. So that's every year it gets painted. We've done it in-house.
Every year. Okay. Got it.
Michael, even sometimes more than once.
Yeah.
Okay.
The painted railings take a beating. They look awful.
The beach rock and stuff thrown against the railing.
Worth of painting versus 50 grand worth of investment.
Right.
Well, John.
So, also the time, you know, 5 years is not a bad payoff. And then also the time that it would be set down or not being able to be used because people are on their painting.
Sorry, I thought you said you painted every 5 years, not that it was a 5 year paint. So, okay. I'm on board. As to my preference, I just don't have one. So, I will defer to the exterior decorators we said Stephanie. Bart.
Okay, Bart.
Just a quick question beforehand. So the surface is a separate stamped material that's added onto the base concrete. Is that correct?
No, that's a good question, Bart. So basically, what's going to happen is if you bend down to the pier now, you see that there's like an asphalt layer that we used to have that nice plastic decking on top of. Basically, the asphalt layer is going to get removed. Stone underneath will get compacted, so we have a uniform depth, because our asphalt cap right now in some places it's 2 inches thick and some places it's 6 or 8 inches thick, so there's not a lot of consistency.
Right.
We'll have a concrete pour. As they pour the concrete, they'll then stamp the finish on the top.
Okay.
And then based on what we choose, they can then stain that concrete. It's not a colored concrete. I'm not a fan of that because they never match it between loads. So it's a stain. You know, it's going to take it's a very caustic environment with the sand, with the lake, so, you know, it's going to hold up much, much better than the decking. You know, we may have to come back and restain it every so often, but we're going to have to see how that holds up.
Okay, good. You answered my question. So my point is, as I look at all the expensive railings going on to this, the big capital expenditure, I love the entrance that you created to Cock Park that we're hoping will last for 80 years. And as Michael said, I want durability. I want it to last as long as possible. And I would hope we are using the best concrete we can get. And I'll just make a 30-second reference. I was at Lake Erie recently, and there's a beach I go to, and there is about an 80-year-old concrete pipe that has like gravel built into it, and it gets pounded by storms probably 20 times a year, and there's no cracks. It's just there. It just lasts forever. I don't think you can get, and I see that with old sidewalks here as well. The new ones crack all the time. The old pieces seem to last and last and last. So anything you can do to get a higher quality concrete or add something into it so it doesn't crack, I would be in favor of. But I would take the same railing and the same, you know, fake wood kind of stamping. I think that looks good. I like this railing. So
yeah,
I'm there for durability.
I apologize, Bart. I keep forgetting you're new to the board, and this is, it's not you, it's us. We've had these preliminary discussions about it and about the process for the pier itself previously. It's got to be a year ago now. So my apologies. I could have brought you better up to speed, but you asked the question, and probably good for all of us to be reminded of what Chris is managing down there. So Lisa and Chris, do you have the direction you need?
Yeah, I think we do. Yeah.
Okay, wonderful.
Thank you very much. That's a great conversation. Good question.
Thank you, Commissioners.
All righty, so then we will move on to the update on final tax extension. Again, Lisa Shepherd and John, is it Kutera? Am I saying that right?
Kutera.
Okay, John Kutera. Update on final tax extension.
All right, thank you, President Brooks, and good evening, everybody. So I believe historically we've just provided an update when the final tax extension is available from the county, which is what this memo essentially is doing. So just had a one-page memo here in the packet, just summarizing the final levy and how that shook out compared to the preliminary levy. And really, it was exactly the same as the preliminary levy. So overall, our EAB did increase by a little over $5 million, and that really was a direct result of the new property increase of about $7 million, netted with an actual decrease for the old EAB of about $2 million. The tax rate actually increased from 0.621 to 0.648, and most of that is just a result of the new bonds that were issued last year. This is the first year that we're seeing them on the levy. So no significant change from that perspective outside of the new bonds being on the tax roll now. And just a little note that if we do receive 100% of the extended taxes on the 2020 levy, we would receive approximately $150,000 more than what we currently have budgeted for our property tax revenue. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Well, that pays for our railing right there. Get 100%. You work on that. Any questions on that?
Yeah, John, that change from 0.62 to 0.64-ish, can we go back and just recap and make sure that, you know, I think at least Stephanie, Lisa, and I were here, and the rest of the staff were here. I think what we told people was it's going to be about, you know, $35 to $40 a year increase per, I want to say like $600,000 or $700,000 or $800,000 value. Did that, you know, hindsight being 2020, were we correct? Are we on the mark there? Do we know that hit the mark?
Yeah, the overall impact of just that particular piece of the levy, I'd probably have to take a closer look and report back. We do have, we do kind of go through an exercise where we identify what a sample tax bill would have looked like last year and what it looks like for the 2020 levy. We're close to uploading that on to our website if we haven't already done so. But there are additional factors that go into it, Michael, beside obviously just that rate in particular. You start with the valuation, the market valuation of the residence itself, And then the county, Cook County in particular, takes 10% of that. And then they apply a multiplier, which changes year over year, too. In the prior year, that multiplier was about 2.9%. This year, it's 3.2%. So it's really hard to kind of exactly pinpoint, you know, this is what it looked like. This is what it would have looked like last year. This is what it looks like this year with all those other changing variables. But as far as just the debt service extension itself, I could take a closer look at that and certainly report back.
Yeah, if you could just, again, kind of dot my eyes and cross my T's and make sure we're in line with what we goals that, you know, when we decide to make the levy, what it is, I just want to double check.
Sure.
Any other questions?
Okay, so if
I'm going to go back and, because we skipped the capital projects update, and I'm just assuming because no one had any questions. Yeah.
Okay, so we will backtrack to something. Capital projects update, Lisa and the much maligned Chris will lead that discussion. Sorry.
Fine. Well, we put a list of all our capital projects. You know, Chris and our team has been very busy on different projects. So I'm sure you read the memo. We're not going to read them all off. If anybody has any questions they would like to know about any of the current capital projects that are underway. Maybe we could have skipped it.
I have a question. I mean, it's kind of related, really not, but when are we turning the water off at Duke?
That's good. That's a good question. We have it in our board packet for next week, but we're turning it off on next Monday, correct, Chris? Monday the 20th, because we saw a forecast for really warm weather this week. So we're turning it off next Monday. And then we are closing the trains on the Friday the 29th of October, so right before Halloween. I suspect, you know, sometimes we get snow on Halloween, so... barring any early snowfalls, we'll close it on the 29th.
Okay. And then, I know you have in here, you know, we have certain restaurants, and I don't know if Jonathan is spoken on time, but still on the phone, but just a comment, we heard you, we will discuss it, and it things will depend on if we get that grant, because we went ahead with that grant, so... I realize that, you know, we committed to that and we will see what happens with that. And also, we are looking at Lakefront Park just to acknowledge that. We know that we're going to do work on the tennis courts, and I'm just acknowledging that that is in our plan and we're very aware of that situation.
Very good. Exactly right.
Anything else for capital projects? Any other thoughts or questions? Okay, then we will move on to other business. Lisa?
I have no other business. The only thing I have is to remind you that we switched our board meeting next Monday instead of Tuesday. It's a very small board packet. Pretty much we're swearing in our new board member, which we're very excited about. It'll be a short board meeting. Just remind you, it's on Monday. If we originally intended to be at NRPA next week. We have all canceled that. We're doing that conference virtually. So we will still be in town. So yes, we did have to move it, but it's already published that way. So that's it. So
okay.
We adjourn. Go to our special
board meeting. Thank you, Lisa. I entertain a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Okay, roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Warren?
Yes.
Commissioner Kobe? Mr. Schneider?
Yes.
And President Brooks?
Yes, motion passes. Thanks.